Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome to Maximize Your Hunt, the podcast dedicated to those who want the most out of their hunting property. This podcast explores land management, habitat improvement, and hunting strategies that will help you maximize your time in the field. Follow along as industry professionals that live and breathe white-tailed deer share their secrets to success. And now, the founder of Whitetail Landscapes, your host, John Teeter.
Hi, I'm John Teeter, Whitetail Landscapes. This is Maximize Your Hunt. Welcome back, everybody. It's a weekend. I'm busy doing chores, getting some things together here. I have a couple consulting visits come up. I'm actually working on reports already for 25. I'm trying to get things done earlier rather than just letting them pile up and go to the next client. I'm working on a new format for reporting. That's something that I kind of mentioned in the last podcast, you know, adding new concepts and new ideas. I'm actually going to simplify things, but make things more illustrated. And I'm working with another gentleman to do that. We're hopefully combining some forces to help the masses out. And I think we're going to have some serious new stuff coming out that's going to allow us to connect to people all over the country. I'm really happy about that. And I'm happy I have an opportunity to grow my business. Nothing to mention is I don't plan on taking any more clients for 25. So if you're trying to get a hold of me, I may fit you in. If I do have schedule, I'm starting to build a wait list for 25. Again, I know a lot of different consultants are out there and, you know, you have availability to them, but be smart with your choices. I think, you know, making this decision, this is a long-term thing. This is a relationship. It really takes a concerted effort as a team to kind of build on the momentum that you need to be successful. So I would pause and really think about that. Take time. We're also going to be giving out, I think over the next year or so, a lot of good free information that's going to get you to start to think, you know, a little bit more intelligently and strategically about your property design and layout. Want people to, even if they don't hire us, you know, start to make some of those steps moving forward so they can be more successful. And really, it's all about sharing. Right? Obviously, I'm running a business. It's important that, you know, I'm smart about how I run my business, but I think the more information we can provide to you, allowing you to be successful in your own right, will mean a lot, not only to me, but to your family members, the people, you know, you associate with. So just want to throw that out there, just kind of future thinking. And so we're going to have a series of podcasts here coming up, and this is one of the first ones. We're going to talk with some clients, and John Odette is a client. He's out of Vermont. And I'm really excited to listen to his story and just connect with him and see, you know, how his season went, the work he's doing, and the outcome, the things that are happening as a result of the effort he's, you know, exerting on his property. So let me get him on the line. Hey, John, how are you doing?
Hey, John, how's it going?
Good, good.
Doing well.
Good.
Doing well.
Good. John, real quick, just about you and your location. Where are you out of?
Sure. So I'm on the southern end of Lake Champlain here in Addison County, Vermont. We're in a primarily agricultural area. I actually grew up on a dairy farm right here in the Champlain Valley. I currently work as a lineman here in the state. I do a lot of helicopter patrols. I actually just recently, I don't know if I've even told you, but a couple weeks ago got my drones pilot's license to be able to operate drones on our system, which is kind of cool, and I can see that maybe helping me in other areas as as well.
Yep.
So basically grew up loving the outdoors. You know, we grew up running coyotes with hounds with good friends, and you know, having the dairy farm and all the acreage available, we were always hunting deer, turkeys, and obviously with Lake Champlain right next door, it, you know, grew up spending a lot of time on the lake as well. So just obsessive compulsive when it comes to hunting and fishing in the outdoors.
Yeah, Lake Champlain and the area that you're at specifically is really kind of an interesting area. You know, it's Glacial Lake, and it's kind of tied, obviously, in some capacity to the Atlantic Ocean. But billions and billions of years ago, they carved out this beautiful area, and it's almost picturesque. I mean, it's just beautiful. And you're at the you're not in the mountainous terrain, but you can see some of the mountainous terrain. You're kind of in these, I would say, a little more fertile for Vermont. not necessarily extremely fertile, but fertile ground in comparison to most of those areas. And it's just beautiful. I think that's one of the prettier areas throughout the Northeast specifically. Now, the property that you manage, and we've had Ryan Audette, your cousin, on this, and you're really been the eyes and ears, the in the field, you know, focus for this particular property. It's over 300 acres. You live on the property, you're managing the property, and you're implementing some of the techniques. I've come out, I've caught with you, we've done layout together, right? And I think we talked earlier offline in 22s when the first year I was out there. I think it might have been a stormy, cold period, if I recall, but yeah. I don't remember all the specifics.
I don't know as if we had great weather anytime you were ever out here, but yeah. We've always earned it. I definitely have earned it. And yeah. You guys earned it more than myself, for sure.
Well, there's always teaching moments and opportunities to connect, right? You have a history of experience. I mean, you're pretty much inundated every day with thinking about deer. At least it seems like that, because you communicate with me quite a bit about things you have going on. And I mean, I'm in the same mindset. So it's a really good connection point for both of us. I want you to talk a little bit about your experience with us coming out. You know, how did you relate to us?
Definitely. And I think this is very critical for folks listening, you know, especially anybody that's never been through this process. So, I mean, all of us, anybody that's interested in hunting, you know, you grow up, you have your ideas on how things should be and what you do better and what, you know, what makes you happy, essentially. And one of my earliest kind of eye-opening experiences was I got on the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Board, had a volunteer committee. It was back in 2014, and they pulled a dozen of us from across the state to sit on a committee and look at the hunting, specifically deer hunting in the state of Vermont, and kind of brainstorm on ways to improve hunting across the state. And for me going in there, you know, my passion is hunting and success, but it, you know, as I've fine tuned everything, I too like success with big deer. And I went into that committee, you know, gung ho, like we've got to do whatever we can do in this state to make the hunting better, but also to give the deer in the state a chance to be mature and, you know, reach maturity. And we came up with a bunch of ideas, and long story short, it took the state probably 5-6 years of digesting to actually start implementing some of the ideas, but they now have. Like, example is now we, our harvest for bucks has been limited to one buck a year. And that and limiting the ability of hunters to shoot spike horns in the majority of the state started to create a change. And it went from feeling like you had to harvest the first buck you saw to now with having one buck tag and multiple seasons available with archery, muzzleloader, and rifle, it started to create a different atmosphere where hunters now had to think about whether what quality deer they were willing to fill their tag with. And a lot of folks are willing to just fill their freezer. They don't really care. But a lot of folks were starting to, you know, pass up some of these younger deer in hopes of filling their tag on a larger deer. And where I was going with that committee as well is I met a lot of folks who had a lot different perspective than I did on what makes them happy and what makes them feel successful. And it really opened my eyes because I went in there with this mentality of we need big mature bucks. And I heard from a lot of different folks in that room that found their happiness and success in other ways other than hanging on to a great big set of antlers. And it really, you know, made me sit back in my chair and think, am I looking at this wrong? You know, and it just makes you, made me understand how different people look at things differently. And just because I think one thing, it doesn't mean, you know, that that's what the majority wants, or that what I do in the woods and what the deer I harvest would be the same thing that would make you happy. So it was a big eye opener. And when you, John, and Josh came out to the farm, I remember being very open-minded on like, where are we going with this? And really wondering how could we make things better? And right out the gate for me, sitting at the table with you guys and discussing things and opening up about secrets, and you and both Josh telling me about things that you do to implement and make things better on a property and create deer flow movement differently, or actually do enhancements to your property to help you hold deer, and all these things. And I remember sitting there looking across at you and thinking, never in my hunting career have I sat here and told people my secrets. And it was like an aha moment for me to listen to you telling me these things to make it better. Because growing up, you know, you always wanted to be the guy that had one foot ahead of the other guy, you know, next door. And we, as you know, John, we live in an area with very high hunting pressure. So anything you could do to give you an advantage over, you know, the guy next door, you wanted to take advantage of.
Yeah. In your particular area, I would say in that particular region itself, it's probably one of the more pressured areas because of, like we talked about earlier, the quality compared to the rest of the Green Mountains, et cetera. So, you know, I can see how, you know, the mindset would be such that I need to protect what is mine and eliminate either others from knowledge or from opportunity. And, you know, when we come into this, in the scheme of things, and I was there first consulting, you know, and Josh and I came back up and did work, et cetera. But when I was there working, at least initially, my objective is to shift your mindset. So we're going to take everything you think you know, and we're going to erase it. And we're going to start from scratch and be very simple how we look at the landscape and have definitive decision-making processes that relate to a bigger goal, whether it's, you know, creating, you know, I'll say the ultimate bedding area or the you know, concise travel corridor or an open travel corridor that's more functional. So we're, you know, you're taking aspects of design and I'm giving you the answers for success. Now it's your opportunity to either agree or disagree, but question and then grow. And one thing I always say, and you've listened to this podcast probably enough to know, is you can take the examples and explore those even more. So you have to come into your own right with this approach. And so your learning is my learning, my growth is your growth. And that's the relationship we have in my business, which obviously leads to success for both parties. But why don't you talk a little bit more about just work implementation, your thoughts, and transition from just, you know, a client to now you're an executor, you know, you're doing the work. So,
yeah, absolutely. So, you know, some of the things that I almost felt kind of like an idiot for not considering some of this stuff myself. But an example is I had a youth weekend hunt with my daughter on this property shortly after we acquired it. We sat in a back in a what I thought was a pretty good travel corridor, and she managed to harvest a nice buck. But what I noticed in that area was we just happened to be in the right place at the right time with this buck traveling through. But one thing I noticed, and especially observing it on cameras, was how fast a buck would go through our property. And we're talking over 300 acres. And with multiple cameras, I could see a buck go through this place, you know, sometimes within minutes. And one thing I learned from you, and it's an aha moment, was by how creating these different pockets of bedding, creating, visual blockages and wide open areas, creating more feed opportunities for deer, how it just slowed everything down. And we're now into year three of making a lot of these changes that, you know, that you've included in the plan and presented to us. And we've seen a drastic change. It's been unbelievable. And line work, we have a phrase, plan the work, work the plan. And you provided us with a plan of how you thought we could make changes and help control deer flow. And, you know, and I remember vividly explaining to you some of our challenges as far as, you know, where we're losing deer, you know, where the deer flow is. And, you know, and we, especially that first year, made some very drastic changes on this property. And, you know, to sit there and watch trees dropping and, you know, and the transformation was one thing, but then to actually see everything start to take place was amazing. And, you know, I don't know if you want me to roll right into, you know, how we've progressed over the years, or if you have, you know, anything else in between you want me to cover. But
no, I want you to talk, because I don't think this is my place to talk. I want you to explain. What I want to get people to get out of this is I want motivation. And and I think motivation is important this time of year, because you've just had a hunting season. You know, you're sitting on your couch and you're asking yourself, what do I do? And, you know, if I'm not there or sitting next to you, I want them to listen to you specifically and use this as kick in the butt. So why don't you just go, just talk.
Okay. I gotcha. So this property, when my cousin purchased it, it had been primarily corn and soybean farmed, and the fields were in pretty tough shape. We did some soil testing, did some fertilizing. I remember our first year actually mowing the fields here, my father having to come over with his big mower and mow down 30 acres of almost pure Queen Anne's lace in the fields, because there was essentially nothing else. It was like a desert. We overseeded, drilled the fields with kind of a conservation mix seed, got the fields starting to come back into it. And that was about the time you guys came out and helped starting to implement the plan and come up with areas where we could do habitat improvements. Again, a big aha moment for me was in my years of hunting, and I'd had some success hunting, but I had focused, as I think a lot of people do based on social media and marketing and whatnot, was to focus on food plots. And another big moment for me was all of a sudden understanding that, you know what, you're right. The amount of time a deer spends in a food plot versus in your woods is, you know, the ratio is crazy. And the understanding of having feed available to them as far as browse, and then having, you know, the cover and bedding and just that safety factor involved for the deer on your property, just how quick that changed things. This property had been fairly heavily logged over the last 3-4 years prior to us obtaining it. So we didn't have a lot of mature growth, and we did have, you know, a fair amount of a browse opportunity for deer. But by having, you know, you and Josh come out, we were able to compartmentalize the property into different areas. And this was another takeaway for me was, you know, when we first started managing the property, we had a herd of deer here. We had a handful of does and, you know, the handful of bucks and, you know, the statistics of age class and whatnot. We had that. But what we didn't have was individual areas. We didn't have individual doe groups. We didn't, you know, it was kind of all just one mono habitat, I guess, for the deer. And by implementing all these changes and creating this added structure and bedding and feeding areas, we now have broken the property into like 3 or 4 different sections that now, you know, where I would go from seeing a buck cruise essentially the whole property in a matter of minutes, now I'm seeing 3 or 4 bucks who may never make it into one of these other areas on the farm. They're kind of more hanging out in their individual spots where they have their pockets of doe, they have their bedding, and it's not really until the rut hits hard that, you know, everything kind of goes crazy.
Yeah, you bring up an important topic here, and there's some uniqueness to your particular area. You do get some transition using the winter months. You get a large collective of deer herding up in these particular areas because, again, as I explained earlier, the value or the quality of food availability in those particular areas, there's a lot of cropland. But more specifically, what constitutes success is that consistency. You mentioned just briefly the compartmentalization or segregation, but with that, there's a lot of connectivity. And that was one of the things a property, I think, didn't really present itself clearly with is how do you take these big open areas and make them well connected to portions of timber or shrubland or even orchard settings. So one of the objectives, I think, with your design was making sure that a separate 40-acre piece is well connected to a field setting, which is well connected. And usually we use a dumbbell example, you know, in those transitions, you know, at the ends of the dumbbell could be loafing areas, bedding areas, corridors, any type of activity that deer we want to spend a lot of time in. And then we have these transition areas, which essentially are travel corridors in some capacity, but they don't necessarily have to be travel corridors as well. So it's just taking some of these concepts and applying them. Break. The other thing I wanted to mention was your property is vast. So having these elongated fields that are wide open that deer can easily see you coming and going and trying to compartmentalize or create separation. Essentially, you're trying to fragment movement in some capacity for huntability. Like I don't want deer to physically get in these areas. But separately, I want deer to transition and flow right next to them. So it's being a little touchy, but very specific on where deer go through and why, and making sure every single dot is connected. The example we always use is daisy chain. We daisy chain, you know, factors of design together so it's a fluid motion and movement. And it just creates this kind of experience, but then we have the hunter intrusion piece of that. And we have to be very, I would say, specific on trying to, when we colonize or when we go in those areas, you know, we don't create any distraction. And that property, because of the way it lays out, there's goods and bads. I mean, there's easy access points and there's hard access points. So, you know, it's one of these, and I'm sure that you'll admit, it takes a little time to figure that out. And even with a drawing, it's like, is this actually going to work? And I think maybe there's some skepticism all the time. Is it work? And I say, every client I say, I go, I'm going to give you, I can make this property work. I can make it run like a machine. It's all in the matter of you believing. And if you believe, you know, this is, I feel like if you believe, you know, you will find success. And it's getting people past the point of actually saying this works. And we could be as detailed and complex as possible. You're really simple and just, you know, connect one area to another area with switchgrass. Right. So I just want to, I want you to dialogue a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you changed that and brought that all up, because one of the immediate challenges we had with a property is that the center of the property is primarily big, wide open field. And a lot of that we can see right from the house. So, you know, just general observations right from the house is, you know, when you got kids riding mini bikes and, you know, all kinds of activity, farming, you know, we also have beef cows and whatnot here at the farm. So there's always activity. And I did notice the deer, you know, wanting to stay back in the shadows. And this was another major concept, and I'll go into this in greater detail about this past hunting season, but was adding the screening. That was a total brand new concept to me. Screening, the edge feathering along the edge of the fields, you know, so kind of to go back to your point is, I remember sitting and talking with you about all these options and things you could do, and probably like every client you've talked with and dealt with and everyone you ever will, you leave there and your brain is so full and you have all these things you want to do. And, you know, you quickly realize you can't do all this at once, and you've got to just start taking little bites and try to, you know, figure out what your biggest bang for your buck is out the gate, and then just keep working and working. And, you know, it, the first year we didn't see, in all honesty, a whole lot of difference, but year two, we started retaining doe on the property, which was huge coming, you know, with a rut coming, to actually have bucks staying instead of fleeing. I remember the first year on the property watching a hot doe go across the middle of the field with five bucks chasing her. And then the place was like a ghost town for, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks with next to nothing for buck activity. And now that activity is staying here. And that's been a huge, huge game changer for us. You know, last year was a horrible year, as it was for most everybody here, especially on the East Coast, as far as it rained damn near every single day of the summer. It was really hard to work food plots. We had a hell of a time trying to get hay in off the fields. We actually had fields that we didn't get hay in off of. You know, the plots did okay, but not great. And then this year it was flip-flopped. Luckily, we had enough dry weather initially. And the other thing to mention is that we are primarily clay here. And I mean hard pan, unforgivable clay, stick to your boots, drag you down, hope you make it to the house type clay. It's miserable. It's either hard as a rock and you need a chisel to break it apart, or it's so wet you can't do a damn thing. And so
an extreme example compared to the rest of the country. That clay-based soil, you'll very rarely see that in the rest of the United States. You're a pocket of clay, and that's problematic. But go ahead.
Yeah. But we've learned to manage it, and you've got to take advantage of the weather when it's there. And you know, last year we squeaked by. This year I was able to get things planted. I went with a little change. I added a lot more soybean here on the farm than I had historically, and it proved to be a game changer. So by finally adding the food piece into the, you know, all the structure work and habitat work we did on the property, it was like finally adding the, you know, the bringing the ace into the card game. It was just amazing to watch this transition. We historically have hunted pretty hard. I've got a big family. The kids all like to hunt. So it's hard changing up from trying to be out there and getting lucky to trying to strategize, trying to make, you know, your travel in and out of stands, so you're undetected to the deer, trying to keep the pressure to a minimum. We managed to harvest three deer, three nice bucks, not nice by probably terms of, you know, the guys out west, but make you happy, happy to put your hands on nice bucks off the farm this year. And we did it with hunting, you know, out of the, considering archery, muzzleloader, and rifle, we probably only hunted a total of, I don't know, maybe 20 days total. And that's huge. No. It's being able to actually use your data, use your intel, and observations. Again, I know you say it all the time on about every podcast you do, John, and so does everybody you talk with, but observation was also a key critical point. I can't stress it enough how important it is to know what's going on your property. And, you know, there's days where I get home late from work and I know I can't get into the best spot. It may be one of the best days. The weather may be perfect. I may have that gut feeling like this is the night I'm going to kill. I got a good opportunity on this target buck, but I get home late from work or one of the kids needs a ride somewhere for something. And I know I'm going to be pushing it to get in the stand. So I don't go, but I go to a spot where I can watch. And one of the key things we did this summer was we built a beautiful tower out in the center of the big field that we have here. It's probably a 40-acre field. And from this tower, it is, I mean, you're like in God's post. You know, you can watch 3/4 of the property. And there was several nights that myself and my wife and I, a couple nights, just went out and sat up in the tower and just watched what was going on. And it was amazing. I know that was probably a lot of the texts I sent you this year, John, was just, you know, it just moments of disbelief and watching, you know, the activity, actually getting to see, you know, the breeding, the pre-rut and breeding activity,
Yeah. You
know, all the different interactions. I don't know how many times I watched bucks fighting and how many times I watched multiple bucks fighting in the same field or plot, you know, at the same time, and just sitting there like looking around like, holy I can't believe I'm watching this, right? You know, and the first opportunity, I guess I'll roll into our season this year, the first opportunity I had on a real nice buck, he's only 3.5, which a 3.5-year-old buck here in our area is like looking for the Holy Grail in itself. But to have him, you know, beautiful 8-pointer in range, and what do? I pull out my phone and I video him going through the corn in front of me, and we had a licking vine set up, and, you know, he goes through and I video it, and, well, you know, boy, didn't I catch hell when I showed that to the guys at work. They're all like, Jesus, yep, here's our dad. Now he's the this nature guy. He's just out there taking selfies with deer, you know, and it's having this transition. It's unbelievable. And I know we're just at the beginning stages of it. And I remember going into archery, I passed up that buck the first day. That same first morning, my target buck got shot by a neighbor, and it was a beautiful double main beam buck that I was hell-bent I was going to spend my whole season chasing him to try to get him, and right out the gate, bam, gone. And I remember you texting me and saying, how do you feel? And I remember looking at my phone and like, you really want me to answer that? You know, it's like, damn, we were right out the gate. And so that was a hard hit right out the gate.
Well, John, just really, really quick, you know, I asked that to a lot of people because the response to that is either you're going to be, I guess, your feelings are going to be suppressed. You're going to move on. You're going to deal and move on. You're going to be just rescinded and sit back and say, I don't know what to do next. But the difference in your situation at this point is you got options. And having options is a huge piece of this. You know, we go from, we've got 5 deer and they run through the property, or 3 bucks, they run through the property and season's over. Now you have this design set up. The deer kind of move through very consistently. Yes, you're going to lose deer to the neighbors. And, you know, as long as those neighbors are making similar decisions to you or recognizing the work that you're doing and the related changes that you're seeing, you might get a neighborhood influence going on. And the reality of it is you've created this atmosphere. You're essentially, your home is almost in the center of the property, and you're surrounded, which is unique to you. You're surrounded by fields. There's a lot of activity. Like, you would be like, oh my gosh, this sounds like a disaster, right? But we make it work, and there's a farming aspect of it. So we have farming, we have deer hunting. I mean, it's got everything going for it, which is a lot of activity, but it seems to work. And I feel like walking in the season, you probably recognize like, hey, I can sit here and you've got kids, you've got other people, your wife, people want to hunt. and you want opportunity, and you're balancing all this, like you said earlier, have you created the atmosphere or opportunity for them to actually have a really good experience? And I think that's probably what you're going to get into next.
Right. And you know, that I have transitioned. And one of the things I've learned with that Fish and Wildlife Board experience was just the transition of the average hunter, and how you start out young, gung-ho, and you're just looking to fill a tag. And then as you mature and get older, suddenly now you're, you know, your standards are changing, and you're maybe wanting to get a mature animal, and then you're maybe wanting to get one of your biggest animals. And then for me, one of the biggest changes was having children and getting my children involved. And when they really started taking up hunting, my oldest son, Carter, he was born with the lucky rabbit's foot right between his cheeks. I mean, he came out the gate just absolutely having luck like you wouldn't believe. And he has, to this day, harvested some of the biggest bucks in our area. And it's been amazing. So my transition now primarily is focused on giving my kids a good experience, giving my wife a great experience. You know, she harvested her first buck ever here. She's since harvested two. She actually passed up a really nice buck on the last night of rifle season here. You know, she never even picked her gun up off the rest on the side of the tree, you know. And I was like, yep, in my head, I knew she wasn't going to shoot it. And, you know, she's like, boy, he's going to be a real nice deer next year. And it's so awesome to get to that point, not only myself, but, you know, have the family making decisions like that. So our season this year, I passed that buck that first day. I lost my target buck. I had another, you know, I had options, as you said, and I had a beautiful buck come out, another nice 8-pointer. He ended up buddying up with the one that I had passed. My wife and I sat in the stand. I think it was almost to the day when you had your miss. And we had these two beautiful bucks in front of us. And now I've got this game going on in my head. Like, I don't want these deer gone. I want them next year. I want them bigger, you know? And so I'm playing this game in my head. And then I'm thinking, oh, Dad, you know, you've done all this work. We're how many years into doing all this? And I hadn't personally shot a deer off the property in a few years. And, you know, I've always tried to let everybody else be successful and feel the gratitude of, you know, what they feel. And that's been fine for me. And I was like, you know what, it's time. So I remember my wife sitting on a stand on the back of the tree behind me. And I turned to her and I said, get the video out and video this. So I've got this beautiful buck at 35, 36 yards standing there broadside. And wouldn't you know it, I shoot right over the top of his back. I had, yep. I looked at the pins and my first top two pins just had become a blur and I used the wrong one. And before the deer had even left the field, she's whispering in my ear, you missed. Cause she's already looking back at the video. And she's like, you missed. And I'm like, oh my word, I missed. It's like, holy shit. Here I am so hard on the kids on, you know, take your time, breathe. And, you know, and I miss. And it's on video, you know, to boot. And I remember coming back to the house, tail tucked in, like, what the hell? And I text you, and I think it was the next day even, that you text me, I missed my target, you know, and it was like, all right. It's always, pain's always less miserable when you got somebody to share it with, you know, and it happens. But I also looked at it from that buck got a name Lucky after that, because I looked at it like, you know, it wasn't meant to be. And I had options. There were still options. I had a buck that I didn't see very often, but about that, you know, within days after, started daylighting. And this is another thing. I know I said I would come back to it, but this year I did a lot of screening. I did sorghum as my screen. I had tried doing some switchgrass, and I did it the year we had, it did nothing but rain, and I had minimal success. And I told myself, I'm not going to take another chance because I want the screening. So I went with sorghum, and I planted more screen. I don't know how many acres of screening I planted this year. and it was just the next thing to try. You had encouraged it. It was in the plan, and it was time to really start to implement it. So I did more screening than I'd ever done. And it was unbelievable. This was probably one of the next biggest changes that we did on the property was this screening. It worked unbelievable. We went from having, minimal deer activity in daylight hours to all of a sudden it became a challenge to get into the stand on time because the deer, I don't know if it created like this security for them. They would pop out of the screen, and this where I'm going with this story, this buck that I was after did this. He would pop out of the screen and he would eat in the soybean with that screen about 10 feet off his backside, and he'd eat along the edge, and it was like he knew that safety was there for him, and it just made him, come out earlier. It was a lot more relaxed, and it wasn't just him. It was, all the deer. We just saw more daylight activity.
Yeah.
Than we'd ever seen. That screening just worked amazing. And I think it, when you have bucks working the edges of your plots and fields and whatnot, by adding that screen where they can't see what's going on out there and they've got to commit to coming out to being a part of the party, essentially, it just makes them have to commit to doing that earlier. And with limited pressure and that security, it was amazing how the deer transformed and how relaxed, and it was just like this was just another one of their happy places. They were just wanted to be out there to the point where they were bedding in my beans, and I had that challenge where now the deer are liking life and liking the place so much that they'd be bedded out in the beans, and it just became that much harder and that much more critical for trying to hide behind the screen and getting in and out of stands and playing the wind and whatnot. But John, so this buck start.
John, just one misnomer, but something I want to put out there just to be a little more controversial with the information that's available to folks is, even on my own property here is, everyone thinks these does bed right up next to food. And I'm not saying that they don't. I'm not saying you can't create that, but I do the same thing with bucks. I'll have a buck, and I do this on my own property. I have areas where the bucks are literally 20 to 30 feet off a food plot and stacking them super close. Tight movement, but then that's where this whole, planning and activity around how you hunt them has to be, well thought through. So I just want to mention that, stop thinking specifically that, there has to be this depth of cover example that everyone listens to. That I've erased that on every property. If I'm doing the work and I can put the deer where they need to be, I'm putting as close as they can because I want that movement maximized. So therefore, they're only going X amount distance to a certain area, so it is more huntable. So I just want to mention that.
Yeah, no, that's definitely worth mentioning. And I'm going to add to that probably one of the biggest challenges I faced with having that now is the late season. Like once we get snow and it gets crunchy and noisy, where it's hard to get in on stand, without making a racket and everything knowing you're coming. And a lot of times, even, going as slow as you can and whatever, you're not even up in the stand yet and the deer are popping out because they've heard the noise and they think other deer are out there. So it's just crazy how that changes everything.
Yeah. That's the one tough thing with you, John, is you're in the ice belt up there. And I think a lot of people don't realize switchgrass will lay right down in an ice belt. Some of the screen will lay right down. And that's tough for a farmer or somebody who's worked with the field settings is specifically, how do you create opportunities of screening? You change your setups. Like there's a lot that goes into like a strategy behind your environment that you're hunting in. More specifically, if you can position the deer in different locations, we call these anchors, having food sources within bedding areas, like a faux pas, something that nobody ever wants to talk about. I've listened to somebody recently, it's pretty well known. No, you never do that. We do that all the time on these properties, and that creates that staple. But again, they may be as close as possible to those food sources. So there's really some strategy that needs to go into this, specifically in those crunch periods we're talking about is the audible. They can hear for a long distance away. So just got to be smart about everything. It's tough.
Yeah, absolutely. And, to that point, too, when there's foliage, this place is so different. And then you lose the foliage, still have the screen. It still gives you that protection. We get the wet, heavy snow. It flattens your screen. Everything now becomes wide open. Never mind, you've got the snow brightening everything. So it really is, it's a huge game changer. One thing I notice here on our property particularly is we've got Amtrak train that runs across the other side of the lake. And in the summer months, you can barely hear it. But once you lose the foliage and things are more wide open, it's amazing how much the sound carries around here. And that's where I'm going to go with my story here on how I killed. So I had a rainy night, got in what we call our teardrop stand, which I'm sure you remember. We did a bunch of bedding improvements in the cedars down there in there, you and Josh and I. And so I'm sitting in the stand that's overlooking this. It's primarily soybean with some corn, and this target buck comes out on the back corner of the field. And like I was saying, he comes out off the screen and he literally feeds until it's too dark to see him right in, within about a 15-foot circle off the edge of the screening. And, you know, and I'm pumped to see him. There was a bunch of other deer. I had opportunities on a couple younger bucks if I'd wanted them. And I was able to sneak out of there without disturbing anybody. There was actually some bucks fighting in the back end of the field that was a good distraction for me to be able to sneak out. And so now I'm pumped because I know this buck is coming in off onto our property, and I know he likes this area. I get a few pictures of him. A couple days later, the conditions are right again for me. And this is where it comes into the challenging part. I'm walking down into the stand, and I've got like this 15-foot gap in the screening where I round the corner to come down in towards the stand where I'm in the wide open. And wouldn't you know it, I'm like 7 feet into this 15-foot gap, and I look up, and here comes this doe and a fawn out in front of me at about 60 yards. And I'm standing there like, damn, oh, you know what goes through your head when you're about to get pegged. And sure enough, she steps out about 40 yards off the edge of the screen and pegs me. Two young bucks come out behind her, and they're all standing there staring at me. And I'm like, what are my options? I had my coat on my side, so I just slowly opened my coat really wide so they would really be wondering what the hell I was. I was trying to do anything at that point to make them think I was anything but human. And they did end up pushing off into the back of the field. They were spooked, but, you know, they didn't tear out of there like they do when they know it's a human. So then I huffed it down into my stand, got up in there, and I hadn't realized it at the time either, but there was like 20 or 30 Jake birds all out feeding in the soybean, and where they were, I hadn't been able to see them. So I think that kind of helped settle the deer as they had left as well. And probably 20 minutes before the end of legal shooting, I look and out steps that buck, and I've got a picture of it on my phone. I think I've sent it to you, where I took the picture of him standing there when he came out next to the screen, just looking unbelievable. And I'm watching him feed, and I'm like, I've got time. Hopefully, you know, he's going to make his way out across here. He's the only deer in the field. And as I'm watching him, all of a sudden he turns and he's going to leave me. And I have that moment of panic, like, oh crap. And I reach in my bag and I grabbed my grunt call and I gave him one grunt, and he's out probably 160 yards. And he instantly heard it and, you know, whipped his head looking my way. So I'm like, well, I stopped him. I flipped my grunt tube over and just used the tube part and did a snort wheeze and thought, you know, it's worth a try. I'm going to try it. And man, he bristled up, turned, and he came marching out towards me like a soldier looking for a fight. And I said, holy shit, this might happen. And he ended up coming in to about 80 yards. He stopped and tore up the ground like a bull does when he's getting ready to flatten you in the field. And he came to about 60 yards and kind of held up again. And I gave him one more snort wheeze, and man, he blew right up. The hair on the back of his neck and everything stood up on end. He came in 40 yards and I smoked him. You know,
awesome.
Yeah, it was, I wish my wife could have been there, or one of my kids could have been there with me to have experienced it. My wife actually went down with me to retrieve him. And, you know, he's not a massive deer by any means. He's probably, I would say, one of the biggest deer I've ever killed in Vermont. And, you know, I couldn't be happier.
Trophy. And yeah, it's just a trophy.
Yep. You know, and I'm going to revert back to my experience in that Fish and Wildlife Board meeting, listening to people talk about what makes them happy. And I'm just going to tell your listeners that the same thing, do what makes you happy. Don't try to do what everybody else does. Do what makes you happy. If there's a deer that you can harvest that's going to make you happy, make the family happy, or if there's one that somebody in your family or a friend wants to harvest and you know that that's going to make them happy, do it and go for it. You never get that back. You know, those opportunities aren't always going to be there. Take advantage of it. For me to get to put my hands on that deer and bring it back to the house and actually spent the last couple of weeks boiling and making European mounts on all our deer heads from this year. And we had a couple from last year that I did. And, you know, I brought it into work and showed the guys a few days ago. We had some training and, you know, it's an awesome feeling. And it's so cool to know, you know, you did the work, you manipulated things to make them just so. And then when it all comes together and you get that opportunity, it's just, it's an unbelievable feeling, you know. And in all honesty, I wish I could have videoed it and shared it because it was just that cool. It was so much fun. And, you know, like I said, we're in year three of implementing all these changes, and I know it's going to keep getting better. I'm already vibrating on things I'm going to do for next year and changes. And, you know, that's the fun of it. And that's the other thing, is find the fun in it. Don't get yourself to a point where, you know, you're just so stressed and pushing yourself so hard that you aren't enjoying it. You know, take a minute every now and then when you're out in the woods, just take that minute and look around and look at what you've got and what you've created. And, you know, just observations of watching deer in their natural environment and not being stressed. And, you know, it's all priceless. It's good for you. It's good for your body, your soul. And it makes you want to live and go out and do it the next day, you know. And, yep. You know, losing that buck first day, getting that text from you, how do you feel? You know, I remember being like, shit, and a few other words, but at the same time being like, you know what? This is the first day of archery. We've got acres of feed. We've got this place looking awesome. The screening is unbelievable. You know, we've done all this habitat work. It's far from over, you know, and it was. And the biggest challenge that I've found going into this, and I know we've talked a little about it, was we've created this mecca, and it was, you could almost script how things were going to work, how deer were going to move. But the biggest challenge for me this year, and what was, because we actually had some good substantial bucks on the property, was just how it changed when the rut hit. Opening day of rifle season, we lost 5 bucks off the property on the surrounding properties. And that hit me really, that was probably one of the hardest hits I had to take of the season. Because it was like, man, how quick things can change. To that point though, you know, it hurt losing those deer out the gate, but we had 3 beautiful bucks that came in on the property. My son, who actually he made the Vermont Big Game book, or the book of records. He made the record books for the state of Vermont last year with a buck he harvested here, which we didn't even talk about. He sat out on stand. He's 15 years old. And I, of course, I'm tagged out. I shot my archery buck and I said, Oliver, you want me to sit with you out on the stand today? And he's like, no, I'm good. I'm just going to sit by myself. And I'm jonesing to go hunt anytime I can. So I'm like, Oliver, really? You don't want me to go sit with you? No, I'm good. And now I'm like a little butthurt, you know, like, what the heck? Did I tick you off, buddy? What's going on? He's like, no, I just want to hunt by myself. So, all right. So off he goes out to a stand, and we had a little bit of snow on the ground. And as it's getting light, I'm looking out the bedroom window in the field, and I can see deer in front of him. And he has this beautiful buck hot with a hot doe, comes out in front of him. He doesn't know it's legal shooting. You know, we're like 2-3 minutes into legal shooting, doesn't know he can shoot. the buck ends up locked down in one corner of this big field that you remember. And he's probably 200 yards, maybe a whisker more. And I've got my 15-year-old boy sitting in a tower with this buck, you know, bumping this doe around out in the, it's kind of like a CRP because we didn't get the hay off that section of field this year. And I'm in my mind debating, like, do I let him take this shot? And he's got my rifle, which you could shoot the balls off a tsetse fly with. I'm not concerned with the gun not hitting where it needs to, but I'm concerned having a 15-year-old boy shoot, you know, and I'm trying to watch out the bedroom, and I'm like, I'm not there. I can't coach him. I'm not going to know where the deer goes if it doesn't drop. And so I made the call. I'm like, Oliver, if he comes back in by you, you know, and you get a good shot, take it. But I just don't want you shooting that far. And long story short, he didn't get that deer. As he was watching that deer, I'm in the bedroom, and all of a sudden I look out, and the old orchard, as you know, on the property is only a couple hundred yards from the house. And here comes this beautiful eight pointer walking across the orchard, headed, you know, my son's direction. I watch him stop, make a scrape. I call him on the phone. I'm like, there is another buck coming. Get ready. And so he's in there watching, and the one window he didn't open on the tower was the window that faced back towards the house. Just, I mean, who would, you know, you aren't going to open a window and look at the house. And when you know it, that buck comes out, hits the field and runs right up the road that goes right to the tower. That's right in between the house and the tower, comes around the corner, gets on a couple doe that were out in the beans and gone. So my son, you know, at 15 got to see two of the most beautiful Vermont bucks that nobody in this state would even believe the story, for one. But, you know, and one of them probably would have made the books. He would have almost made the books again this year if he could have gotten him. So, when Oliver came back to the house kind of dragging his tail, I sat him down. I said, Oliver, I can tell you there is nobody in the state of Vermont that had an experience like you just had this morning. I said, it's pretty awesome. And, you know, that's probably one of the biggest challenges I've had with my kids is, you know, providing them these opportunities where they do get to go out and sit and holy crap, there's a buck, bang, done, you know, go home, versus the old days of me growing up where you damn near froze to a chair and, you know, come home and it may be days or you may not even get an opportunity at a deer for the season. Never mind now implementing all these changes that give you all these advantages, you know, it's just crazy. My daughter this year, youth weekend, we went out, sat 2 hours opening morning of youth weekend and she harvested her buck. And, you know, it's the same thing. It's just amazing the opportunity, but you also, you know, with your kids, you want them to be humble. You don't want them to expect to have things just fall in their lap all the time. And I've been big on getting my kids involved. Oliver planted, you know, 7 acres of soybean for me this summer. He was his butt on the tractor and he was planting while I was disking ahead of him and, you know, doing other things. And my older son, Carter, helps with all the maintenance on the equipment, and all the kids help one way or another. And so, you know, like Ryan calls, he's like, tell them they're earning their buck. They're earning their buck, you know? And that's really what it's about, is trying to get everyone involved and understand what the differences are. And, you know, when you're so-called anal with your kids or, you know, with your family or friends or whoever may be on your property, there's a reason, you know, there's a reason that you're so hard on scent control and, you know, how you're getting in and out of the stands and, you know, all of it. It all plays together and it all helps keep your, you know, your pressure low and your critters happy. And yeah, I guess that's my story. You're probably ready to pull the plug on me, aren't you?
No, I'm not ready. I'm going to pull it in a second, but I'm going to give you kudos. Two things I want to say. One, your evolution as a land steward and manager. I mean, look at where you came from 3 years ago, right? Look at where you're at today. Look at the decisions you're making. Look at your mindset. You've changed. You've done a 180. Not that you weren't, you know, competent and capable. You had killed deer. None of that. Like, that's relevant. But now look at where you're at today. You're in a totally different direction and path. You are seeing the fruits of your labor. By the way, you got tons of good bucks next year to even add into this equation. But that's a different story. Money in the bank, so to speak, but there's future opportunity. You've already been successful. You realize that you're making the plan what it is. It's amazing the plan actually, you know, I say I've come up with 80% of the solution. It's your job to do 100% of the work. And if you do 80% of this, you'll have 100 to 10, 120% success. You've already done all that. You've got more to do. You know, you've got timber to cut. I'm always on you. Did you cut timber? Did you do this? You know, because right. I want to see you get there, but I can see it, right? And the thing I want to mention is when I'm coming there and I cut, I can see where the deer is going to come out. I know where they're going to bed. I have a pretty good understanding of what's going to happen as a result of all the work that I'm doing. And, you know, you've seen that. I can tell you the deer are going to be here. This is going to be one of your best spots. You'll kill there. There's the tree, right? You see, I can already envision everything. But I think you're now at the point where you're like, yeah, I got that. Now I'm going to be really, really, really specific. I'm going to make this work in every instance, or this is going to be more productive because I'm going to put my two cents in it. So I think that's where you're getting to at this point. And that's my focus is not every year is going to be a banger year. Some years are going to be better than others, but you're going to be consistent. And I think that's what a lot of people need to do is they need to have, you know, a 50 acre property. I usually say on average, you need anywhere between, you know, I'll say 15 to 35 days worth of work. So let's say an average of 22 to 25 days on average of work. That's 50 acres. Now multiply that by, you know, 10, 20, these some of these giant properties. Can you dedicate the right amount of work to make this effectuate the plan and be, in this case, successful? And not mm-hmm. your success is bridged upon your neighbors, and you brought up that point earlier, but you're still finding success even when there's the wins and losses around you, so to speak. And I really just give you a lot of credit. That's why I wanted you on the show, because I know you've done a 180, and I think that's the important piece of it is you're going in a direction where, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised over the next 5 to 8 years as there's more buck books taken off your property. I feel associated with that. So that's good for me on my inside, right? Because, you know, there's a selfishness and selflessness in this whole piece of this is I need you to be successful. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a Vermont world record or whatever. It just has to be, you know, you're finding that happiness in this equation. And by the way, you know, there's an offshoot where your kids get to experience a different you out there. And I think that's important in this equation. So I kind of want to, that's my two cents on this conversation. I think, you know, other people have different takes. They're like, well, give me the answers to what he did. Well, what he did was he did all the work. I gave you the list of work to do and you did the work. And if you don't continue to do the work, guess what? Things will either go up or they'll go down. And I think in this case, the mindset, the motivation is I want to continue to experience the same things I've been experiencing. But at the same point, you're going to put your flavor of the week on it, your perspective on it, and it's going to make sense to you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you made me think of a few other things too, as you were mentioning that is the nice thing about, you know, having a plan like this and being able to use it and obviously, you know, you can manipulate it. But is you once you get it established, the work you're doing is more or less kind of what you alluded to, or just more fine tuning. You know, there was little tricks I would do this summer when it got so dry. I brought the lawnmower down and I would lift the chute up and blow the first 2-3 passes around my soybeans. I would blow all the clippings out on to the beans to try to help shelter them from the hot sun, you know, when they first emerge, and looking at the forecast, and it's like, damn, we don't have rain for 2 weeks. You know, I was always doing like these little
yep.
tricks and things that anything to try to help give you that edge. And, you know, one of the things I struggled with right out the gate was planting my beans. I had never planted this much, and they started to get out competed with the weeds, and I went in and sprayed like an acre of them, and within 3-4 days the weeds died and the deer literally marched down the rows and snipped all my beans off in like a week's time. It would look like a desert out there, and I'm like, what the hell, you know what? Now I'm like scared to spray anything else, and I'm like, what do I do? And what I did some experimenting. So I waited a couple more weeks to the point where the beans that weren't sprayed were like, I had to like part weeds to see if the beans were still there. And I sprayed an acre. Well, now the beans that, you know, had a couple more weeks growth in them competing with the weeds, they were able to handle a little more browse. And, you know, it was like every couple of weeks I sprayed beans and killed weeds. And the last spray I did, the weeds, the dead weeds are still taller than the beans out there, and the deer are having to pick and work, you know, through the weeds to get to all the bean pods. But it just, it wasn't like exposing everything all at one, you know, one whack where your season's over out the gate because you did something wrong, you know. And it's all, my point is you're able to mess with some of the finer things versus, you know, taking some big, huge gamble that may or break your season. You're always, you know, trying to manipulate things, or, you know, obviously the weather is probably the biggest challenge when it comes to, you know, doing all this. But, it's been amazing.
Yeah. And to that point, there'll be more stuff this summer. I just posted something today of water demand and the water gaps across the landscape. You Midwesters are going to continue to be in trouble, and that will continue to plague you. You'll get these intense rains. Where we get a lot of rain, you've got soil management issues that, you know, we've got to talk about over time on your particular property. But I'm really starting to recognize, I mean, you need space in your soil. That's one of your issues. But what on some of these other properties that are not getting the rain volume, you know, what are they doing? You know, collecting snow, collecting water in any capacity is critical. I'm going to try to help you solve that this summer. And that's my opportunity to share with you all these new concepts of design that are really going to excel some of these properties in the Midwest. And I don't say that wanting to work in the Midwest, because it's a little bit of a jaunt and travel for me, but I think some of the ideology around how to design properties needs to really evolve, and you need to involve yourself and experience change, because the reality of it is, if you're not adapting to the climate and the climate shift in these particular areas, you're really going to be lost in the next several years. And you're going to ask yourself, why didn't I design my property right 10 years ago? And no other consultant's doing this stuff, John. That's the difference between us and Northeast. And you know what it is? It's mindset. It's being super critical, realizing that we got to be ultra specific. Some of your examples, trying new things and redesigning the art of possible. We're redefining that. And that's kind of what I'm going into this year. Is I have way harder products than I had last year. I get the hardest clients. Keep giving me hard, right? And that's what I want, because how I grow. So, all right, I want to end it with you there. I think this is a great conversation. One, appreciate you sharing. I hope you accepted the feedback I gave you. I'm sure you did. And two, I love the success and your willingness to share now. Not everything's a secret. You want other people to be successful, you know, just beyond your family, because it only helps you, you know, learn and grow. And then the last piece of it is I want to hear your story in a year and two from now. And I want to hear about, you know, some of the more specific things that you're working on and the changes that you've made. And again, you just hope that the labor of love just continues to propel you, because you could have a lifetime, you know, on this property that would just be in your retirement age, in your future age, as your kids grow, right? You just want them to experience greatness. And that's the piece that you're starting to find on your own. So it's just great to hear that.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's going to get better. And honestly, even if it didn't, I'm pretty tickled with where we're at, you know? So that's pretty awesome. I do want to add one other thing, John. And
sure.
You know, for folks listening, you know, you opened up your podcast with your availability as far as, you know, being able to help future clients and taking on new clients. And one thing I think feels worth mentioning is your availability to answer a question at any given moment. And, you know, since you've been here and helped us get started, I don't know how many times I've been standing out there looking at an issue or trying to decide what to do and ping you, and you know, within minutes usually you're giving me a response, or sometimes we'll talk and whatnot. And I look at it as, you know, in a hunting sense, you're like a car salesman. But you know, we've all experienced getting a car and driving it off the lot and suddenly getting no response, you know, and that's a terrible feeling. But to have you be available and, you know, at moment's notice, a lot of times to be able to still give input and insight and, you know, or even if it's just a pat on the back or some reassurance, that to me is priceless. And that's essentially what sets you apart from some of the others. And, you know, kudos to you for, you know, for doing that for your clients. And, you know, if anybody wants to talk, to somebody other than you about you, you know, I'd be more than willing to talk to anybody at any time. You know, so by any means, you can use me as a reference or whatnot. And, you know, I really can't thank you enough for the help and the changes you've helped us make.
Yeah, John. All right. Well, thanks for taking the time with me today. I appreciate that at the end there. That shows a lot about your interest and the quality that we're trying to offer to folks. But I appreciate it. Thank you for sharing. Again, great podcast. I'm happy you listen. Everybody who's listening to this, stay tuned. Go in, give it some likes. You want to hear information on here. We're going to do some Q&A stuff. I've got some client stuff that we have to get through. I've promised a lot of these clients I want to get them on the podcast just to hear their stories and have them share. We're going to do some Q&A stuff, and I got some stuff coming up in the future. I got some really cool guests coming up that have not been on this podcast before. So, you know, I'm pretty excited for that. I'm working with some really high-level people, like the highest level in certain different industries that are going to be really instrumental. Got a good podcast coming out here in a couple weeks that I'm excited about. So just stay tuned to that. Please go in, 5-star review. Everybody keep listening, keep sharing, you know, keep growing me and my business. You know, I appreciate everybody's interest. All right, John. Well, we'll talk again soon, man. See ya.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Bye.
Maximize Your Hunt is a production of Whitetail Landscapes. For more information on how John Teeter and his team of experts can help you maximize your hunt, check out whitetaillandscapes.com.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the whole deck with galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as 3 suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.